conversation.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. We're all coming off of huge Thanksgiving feasts where pushing away from the table was not easy. But for people with gastrointestinal diseases, this is not an easy time. Well, the first week of December is Crohn's and Colitis Awareness Week, and tonight we're talking about that and IBS, Irritable Bowel Syndrome. My guests are Dr. Labeliz Padilla, gastroenterologist and director of inflammatory bowel disease at the Naval Medical Center in San Diego, and Melody Blackwell, founder of The Color of Crohn's and Chronic Illness. If you have a comment, if you have a question about this really important health issue, give us a call right now. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I invite you to tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or you can find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Dr. Padilla, thank you so much for joining the program. Melanie, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Sure. Let me first start with some 101 information about these diseases. Dr. Padilla, we have Crohn's, we have colitis, we have irritable bowel syndrome. Can you kind of give us a rundown about what those three are, how they're similar, how they're different?
Sure. So I got to tell you, in my over 10 years of practicing medicine and treating thousands of patients with chronic medical conditions, I will say inflammatory bowel disease is probably one of the most debilitating and invisible medical condition. And that's more of an umbrella term that we think of that encompasses things like Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis. And like I said, these are chronic, debilitating. So patients can have symptoms that include abdominal pain, blood in the stool or in your bowel movements, weight loss, diarrhea, nutritional deficiencies, a really whole host of symptoms because it's really the entire body can be affected. And then you have also irritable bowel syndrome or IBS, which is kind of its own entity, but both can go hand in hand. And I think more importantly, really, inflammatory bowel disease is something that's grossly understood and underappreciated, especially in the Black and Brown patient population community, that we're just here to garner awareness and make folks aware of the big issues and symptoms that plague our patient population.
Melody, talk to us briefly about your experience. When did this first become a problem for you? How old were you? And describe what you've gone through.
You know, surprisingly, my symptoms, when I took a step back after I got diagnosed, my symptoms started around the age of 5 or 6. I was having a lot of long-term bathroom usage, but my father's Indian and my mom is Black. So Black and Brown, right? I am the poster child for both of those sides of my family. And the challenges that present in health, because they didn't know that there were such things as digestive diseases. And so when this long-term bathroom usage started around 5 or 6, it would just be checking on me. If I had a stomach ache, what did I eat? Take some ginger ale or crackers, Coca-Cola. Those are things that were in the house. And the stomach ache, we always connected that to diet. It was never anything outside of that. When I was 13 years old, I actually started having rectal bleeding. And that should have been like a sounding alarm, but it wasn't. And my mom did take me to a gastroenterologist. I did get a flexigmoid, which traumatized me, honestly, because we have this doctor putting this scope inside of my colon, and this is not something that's ever happened to me. And I remember the doctor asking questions like, well, you know, is she sexually active? Or, you know, again, putting it back on me as the patient, even though she shared my stomach aches, that I sleep in the bathroom sometimes because I would have really severe debilitating pains. And when I say sleep in the bathroom, I mean I was sleeping in the tub because my body would feel like it was on fire. And the tub was the only thing that could soothe my whole body all at one time. For years, I had these stomach aches, and it would just keep going, and the rectal bleeding never went away. And physicians would always, once I had that like sigmoid, the doctor said I just had internal hemorrhoids. So every time I would have this bleeding that would come back or persist, I would say, oh, it's the internal hemorrhoids. And I would talk to my preventative care physicians for years about what was going on with me, seeing different physicians, and it never resulted in them doing any real investigation to see why I'm having these pains and having these persistent, reoccurring bleeding. It just never happened until I was 36 years old when I finally got diagnosed. And when I finally got diagnosed, I was going down just a crazy spiral of, like Dr. Padilla mentioned, EINs, which are extra-intestinal manifestations. And I was having facial swelling and lip swelling. And, of course, I was being tested constantly for lupus because of inflammation. But swelling of my feet. I had 64 ounces of fluid removed from my knee. My lip would get so full. I called myself the nutty professor because it would happen and it would come down to my chin. I had arthritis where my joints were locking. And one doctor told me that I had gout. Then I had to start squeezing my lip. But the most challenging symptom was the fatigue that I was having and the 4 months of nonstop bleeding.
Mm.
And when I went to a colorectal surgeon, I was first told that they didn't see anything. But by this point, I wasn't just bleeding when I went to use the bathroom. Actually, when I used the bathroom, I was bleeding. I was sweating profusely. I was in extremely severe pain. I was holding on to the toilet paper ream or the wall because I would start shaking from how painful it was. I felt like Edward Scissorhand had taken residence in my colon.
Oh my
and
gracious.
When the doctor didn't see anything, and then I had to go back and say, no, this is what's going on. I had an abscess, a rectal abscess that burst on his table, and that ended up spiraling me into surgery and being taken seriously. But it took all of those circumstances to actually get me to the pathway that I would be investigated and I would get the right diagnostic experience to determine that I had Crohn's disease. And when I was diagnosed, I had 8 fistula. I was losing my hair. I was losing my mobility. The arthritis was extremely severe, and my joints on my right side, my elbow, my knee, my feet, they were locking up terribly. And it took all of that to finally get diagnosed.
Wow. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about gastrointestinal diseases, specifically Crohn's and colitis and irritable bowel syndrome. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Dr. Padilla, as you were listening to what Melody was sharing, that seems like probably one of the most extreme examples of these diseases. How common is this, Dr. Mm-hmm. Padilla, for people of color? And is it more prevalent in women? Is it more prevalent in men? And also, when might someone first realize that there is, you know, a problem? Obviously, Melody said, looking back, it started with her at 5 years old. But again, how common is what she's sharing based on your expertise?
Sure. So I think what's important to note is that her story is not unique. The fact that she had such a delay in diagnosis and symptoms that persisted for years until she was in her 30s that were diagnosed is a story that, unfortunately, as a physician, hearing this makes me cringe, because we hear this sometimes far too often than we need to. And, you know, I think it's a very complicated answer as to say, why are there these delays in diagnosis? But, it could be insurance coverage issues, distrust in the medical community, cost of healthcare, health literacy, perceptions of these symptoms, and then, being told by a physician that it's one thing, and then you have trust and you believe this, but then, so there's just a lot of issues. There's implicit biases and all these things. And I think it's this sort of avalanche that kind of led to Melody's story, which is, like I said, I think very representative of many patients. And The concern that we have, especially as gastroenterologists, is that Crohn's and ulcerative colitis, we're seeing huge increase in these diagnoses in Black and brown patients. And I think that's probably the most important thing I think I would want listeners to take home, is that this was historically a white disease, and it's not anymore. It's becoming much more prevalent in Black and brown patients.
Why is that?
That's a great question. We don't know exactly, but what I can tell you is that we know that there are certain risk factors that we've been able to identify, and genetics, sure, it plays a role, and we have found markers that can increase risks of certain sort of types of inflammatory bowel disease, or what we call phenotypes. So, you know, Melody mentioned she had fistulas and those sort of things. There's some genetic risk factors for that. But we've also found, and this is very much low-hanging fruit, that ultra-processed foods that we eat, in the American diet especially, is a risk factor for inflammatory bowel disease. And then when I say ultra-processed foods, I'm talking about things like hot dogs and sausages and like Pepsi, Coca-Cola sort of products, and candy, chips, fast food. Those sort of foods that is very prevalent in our communities is very much a risk factor that we've identified as a cause for inflammatory bowel disease. So it's something that we haven't always focused as far as diet or food being medicine, but this is one thing that we know that we can actually change. We can't change our genetics. We can't change some things in our environment, but this is one thing I think that's really important, I think powerful as a patient to hear, that that can be something that can affect the risk of the disease. But why it's really affecting our patient population like this, the details of that, that is something that we're trying to figure out. So, and that's why we're here, to bring awareness so we can make people aware of it.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about gastrointestinal diseases, specifically IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, Crohn's, and colitis. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. Let's go to Ms. Jones, calling from Maryland. Ms. Jones, thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Ms. Jones, can you hear me? Ms. Jones, give us a call back if you can. Let's go to Tanya, calling from Clinton, Maryland. Tanya, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thanks. Hi. I would just like to make a comment. I can definitely relate to this topic at hand. I was actually diagnosed with Crohn's disease at the age of 18 after being misdiagnosed for the better of about 7 years. And I would just say that a lot of providers miss Crohn's disease and other intestinal disorders. They often, especially being an African-American woman, they often will minimize your symptoms and, you know, say that maybe it's emotional, maybe it's mental. When you're in pain, at my sickest, I weighed 70 pounds. And so it was beyond pain. My body was not getting any nutrition. And it was through surgery, having the majority of my colon removed, and then starting on biologic medications is what really saved me. So I've been actively in remission from Crohn's disease for almost 20 years now. And this is something that our communities really need to learn more about. So I would just say, for anyone suffering, to advocate for yourself and have patients really question your providers until you get properly diagnosed, because treatment is available and it can change your life and your quality of life.
Thank you so much, Tanya, for sharing that. And I do want to talk about how this is treated, not only with the medications, but also what role does your diet play? I think, you know, Dr. Padilla, you touched on that a little bit about what you should not eat, but also what you should eat, and even some specific foods that may not be generally helpful if you are suffering from any of these gastrointestinal diseases. So please, I need to take a break, but stay with us. Tyrone, who is on the phone right now, we're going to talk to you. You're calling from Maryland, so please do not hang up. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'll be back on SiriusXM in just a few moments. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are talking about gastrointestinal diseases, specifically Crohn's and colitis and irritable bowel syndrome. The first week of December is Crohn's and Colitis Awareness Week, and we are talking about this with Dr. Labelise Padilla, gastroenterologist and director of inflammatory bowel disease at the Naval Medical Center in San Diego. Also, Melody Blackwell. She's the founder of The Color of Crohn's and Chronic Illness. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before I go back to the phone, Melody, I want to ask you, how are you feeling now at this stage in your life?
You know, I'm going to be honest with you, Harold.
Please do.
I manage really well because not knowing that you had a disease for almost 30 years, you just kind of learn to cope with a lot of the challenges that diseases present or symptoms because you don't know it's a disease. It's just, we called it a stomach issue, or, you know, Melody has stomach challenges or stomach problems or stomach issues. So I think I have developed this space where I know I'm the anomaly, but I manage my symptoms a lot differently than some who may have been diagnosed a little bit earlier, or those who have really succumbed to the challenges and the pressure and the pain, really, of the disease. I will share with you that I have been on over 15 medications since I've been diagnosed 4 years ago, and I am in a space where my medication currently is just not working. I'm not in remission, and I have not been in remission yet.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. Let's talk a little bit about treatments, Dr. Padilla. First and foremost, what is the go-to treatment for any of these diseases? Are they the same? Are they different? What do you say?
Yeah, so they're very different. I do want to make a quick comment about inflammatory bowel disease versus irritable bowel syndrome.
Okay.
They're very much two different beasts. Irritable bowel syndrome is more when you think of kind of the mind-gut connection and potentially an imbalance of the bacteria or microbiome that's within your gut. And it is now what we're finding is to be considered maybe even a sort of low inflammatory state where maybe certain foods or environmental triggers can trigger symptoms that mostly affect more quality of life. Inflammatory bowel disease, or IBD, is the much more debilitating conditions like Crohn's and ulcerative colitis that can have patients in surgeries and like Melody's even alluded to, it just affects your whole body because you can get all kinds of things. And so the treatments are very different. So I'm just going to focus really on inflammatory bowel disease.
Sure.
And I think for, you know, the beauty of things now, I think, at 2022 is we have lots of options. In the past, it was very much limited to maybe steroids or prednisone, which has a huge amount of side effects. And patients would have lots of issues with that. But now we have medications that can help control the inflammation. And depending on the type of symptoms that are going on and how much of the intestine is involved and other sort of details, we choose the medication based off of that. And sometimes it's patient preference. And to be quite honest, a lot of times it's insurance driven. So if insurance is going to pay for one medication but not another, as a physician, sometimes we just have to choose the medication that insurance is going to pay for. But there are lots of options, and I think, you know, just even looking forward, there are many options that are going to be potentially in the pipeline, like medications that are going to be approved. And when I think of treatment, I think of it multi-pronged, meaning we have medications, then we have things like food. And most patients, I will say, need medications to maintain remission, which for us means we think of remission looking like clinical symptoms, meaning the patient, do they feel good? Can they live their life? And if those answers are yes, then we've achieved that sort of cure. And then we think of, well, when we do our procedures and we look with our cameras, does the colon or the intestines look normal? Then that's the next sort of benchmark of success. And then the kind of, you know, Mount Everest of achievements would be that if we were to biopsy and look at things under a microscope, is the inflammation treated and looks like it's quiet and in remission? So those are kind of like our three ways in sort of goals that we have when we treat people with inflammatory bowel disease, is controlling the inflammation, whether it's by medications or, like I mentioned earlier, diet, which can include eliminating high, you know, ultra-processed foods, but also incorporating maybe things that are a little bit more anti-inflammatory. And we think of things more like Mediterranean-style sort of diet. For some patients, gluten can be a trigger, mm-hmm. which can, you know, kind of trigger symptoms. And then I also think of, too, more sort of more holistic approach as well, like yoga and meditation and mindset sort of physical activity that can help with all of these symptoms. And you know, many patients with inflammatory bowel disease also have irritable bowel syndrome as well. And so it's really a balance of figuring out what's the best treatment approach for a patient. I will say not one size fits all at all. Every patient's story is their own, and patients have different needs for treatment and goals for their treatment.
Yeah.
So as a physician, we have to be able to help address that and meet patients where they are.
Sounds very, very complicated in all aspects. And I, you know, my heart certainly goes out to you, Melody, and your experience with this. Let me go to the phone lines, 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tyrone calling from Maryland. Thanks for hanging on. Tyrone, what's on your mind?
I'm really upset going through this. Mm-hmm. 20 some odd years ago. I wish I could take it all back. I wish I could have been better diagnosed in the beginning. My very first colonoscopy, doctor told me after the colonoscopy, he said, you're going to need surgery one day soon, but I can't admit you in the hospital because you don't have insurance. That broke my heart big time when I was just in my early 20s. That broke my heart to hear something like that. And the pain I was going through, I didn't know what it was I was dealing with until I went to Washington Hospital, saw a doctor, and he told me, Crohn's disease,
mm-hmm.
inflammatory bowel disease, and got a second opinion. Another doctor told me it was ulcerative colitis. So I'm like, which is it? One doctor says this, another one says that. And I went home, felt a little better after, you know, a little bit of medications from these doctors, and I had a major relapse. It was like I went to the bathroom and I just bled out.
Well, let me ask you this, Tyrone, because we have a lot of people on the line. Where are you right now? I'm assuming you're probably in your 40s now or so.
Almost 60.
Almost 60. Okay.
Yeah.
So where are you now regarding your health journey?
I mean, my health is pretty good health wise,
mm-hmm.
but the whole experience, I wish I could take the whole experience back big
yeah.
time. Every time I think about it, and the pictures and the blood transfusions and those things, oh man, it was just the hardest thing I ever had to deal with. And to hear,
you know,
this issue.
Tyra, I'm sorry to interject, but I want you to know that your purpose is not in vain. You even going through that, especially with young men and what they're going through now, we could use you at Kochi because there's purpose and power in your story, even talking about the fact that you were told that you couldn't get the help you needed because of healthcare. So I want you to do me a favor. I want you to look us up
Crohn's. Ooh, sorry. That's my earpiece.
And chronic illness. And you can email me directly. You are our website. Our organization is info@cocci.org.
Hold on, Hold on, doctor. Slow down just a bit because I'm going to write this down. I'm going to repeat it, and also I'm going to put it on our website along with the podcast as we do for all of the Daily Drum Insight segments. So it's info at
cocci.org.
cocci.org.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And you can put that, if anyone's looking to reach me directly, just put my name, which is Melody, and it will get to me for sure, I promise. But Tyrone, I thank you for even sharing this. And we are going to turn lemons into lemonade because the fact that you're still here, you endured, you got through, and there's purpose and value in you. And I see it and hear it.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Tyrone. I appreciate your help. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Kay, calling from Maryland. Kay, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, yes, hi. My daughter is 24 years old, and she has two issues that she's dealing with. Her stomach, she's pretty slim, but her stomach is very extended. And also, she always has itching in her rectum. Sometimes there's bleeding, but it's not all of the time. But a lot of times, she told me she has to keep shaking herself because she has this itching. I just wanted to know if those are symptoms of the IBS.
Doctor?
Mm-hmm. Sure. So sometimes itching can be a consequence of either if she's having diarrhea or loose stools. And so that would be something I would actually want her to get evaluated for, to be honest, because there are some laboratory testing and some stool testing where we can very easily get clues as to whether or not her symptoms are because of inflammation, because of inflammatory bowel disease, or could it be from irritable bowel syndrome? And it's really as simple as some blood tests and some stool tests, and that can help sort of triage or figure out what her symptoms are from. But itching in the bottom can sometimes just be either from loose stools or stool that's still in that area that just needs to be cleaned
out. But it's been going on for a few years. And I took her to a gastroenterologist. They hadn't found anything, but she's always complaining.
Hey, how old is she?
She's 24.
Okay.
So I will say, similar to one of the other listeners, how she was saying, advocate for yourself. So if for some reason you feel like her symptoms are still not getting addressed, and maybe there's something that needs to be uncovered, is to maybe seek a second opinion. And that's perfectly okay and well within her right as a patient, is to ask for a second opinion to make sure that something isn't being overlooked. And that's really what I would recommend for your daughter.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. I did want to, if you could, Dr. Padilla, you know, talk to us a little bit more about, you know, the symptoms. Is this, are the diseases that we've discussed, are we talking about diarrhea? Are we talking about constipation? Are we talking about painful stools? What, help me with information about that.
Yeah, so usually symptoms start off very mild, and sometimes they can start off as just bloating or just fatigue. It could start off with rashes in the skin. It could start with hair loss or joint pains and aches and swelling. And then for some patients, then they start getting loose stools. And sometimes the clue for inflammatory bowel disease is patients will wake up at night and have to go to the bathroom and have a bowel movement. That's a concerning symptom. So when people wake up at night out of their sleep and go to the bathroom, that's a problem. And then some patients have blood and pain in their abdomen. And those are the symptoms that I think about when people have inflammatory bowel disease. People can get mouth ulcers and eye issues. And like I said, this affects the whole body. It's this systemic inflammatory process, but does focus a lot of, you know, its inflammation energy, I guess I would say, in the intestine. And so I think what I would tell listeners is it's one of these diseases that you really have to be in tune and listen to your body and not brush symptoms off. Like, oh, it's just my hemorrhoids, or, oh, it's just, I'm just tired, I need more sleep. There's sometimes little clues or little signals that your body sends you. And when you kind of start putting it together, talk to your doctor, if you feel like they're not getting anywhere, no traction, then it's advocating for yourself and finding someone else that is going to listen to you. And but every patient has a lot of different symptoms, and it can encompass all of those things that I mentioned.
Mm-hmm. You know, I have a friend of mine who has, you know, IBS, and we've been friends for maybe 15 years or so, but she's in her mid-50s, and she has only been dealing with this, as far as I know, for about the past 5 to 7 years. But I do remember, you know, on occasions when we would get together for lunch or something like that. I mean, and she, you know, early on, she could eat anything, she could have drinks and the like. But now she is on a pure vegan diet, cannot drink any alcoholic beverage. And on the occasions when she slips and does so, pays a very painful price. You mentioned before, Dr. Padilla, about some of the more holistic ways to try to deal with that. And it seems, at least for my friend, that that vegan diet has helped her manage this when she couldn't before with just kind of regular eating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I typically don't like to recommend necessarily like a specific diet. And mm-hmm. I say that because it is so restrictive, and it just feels like you're telling people what they can't do.
And it is restrictive for her. I mean, she admits it. We talk about it. She may be listening today, because I said, hey, we're talking about IBS on the program tonight. And I know that, it, you know, in the past she has, you know, complained about how restrictive it is.
Yeah. And I think sometimes these sort of changes in food choices are good for a period of time, potentially, maybe to jumpstart things. But I think it's also very healthy, even from just a mindset standpoint, to slowly start incorporating things that bring back joy, you know. So I think, and those are things that take time. That's why a lot of times for my patients, I encourage them to work with a dietitian really closely. Mm-hmm. So that way a dietitian can help with guiding sort of food sensitivities. So like your friend may have, like, alcohol is one of them. And once you can identify foods that you're more sensitive to, then you can sort of change your lifestyle and choices accordingly. And, you know, like I mentioned, really more Mediterranean style sort of food choices are considered more anti-inflammatory. So sort of like fatty fish, olive oils, olives, grains, and like beans, all these sort of things that are really good for us and very nutritious. So those are things that I usually try to help patients encourage to eat. Now, sometimes because of their inflammation or their symptoms, they're not able to do that. So it's really being patient with what's happening at that current present time and figuring out what works, what doesn't work, and then going from there. I think what some patients really run into is the issue of trying to eat back to, quote, normal. They know what life was like 5 years ago, and they try to get to that point, when really we just got to try to do today and then baby steps and move our way forward. And I think it's really important too, as a physician, like, I try to be very conscious of kind of cultural food choices, and especially for like my Latino patients here in San Diego, you know, I know that eating tortillas and beans and rice are very important. And, you know, as me, myself, as a Puerto Rican, I'm thinking, okay, I have to have my plantains and my tostones and my arroz con habichuelas, so rice and beans. And so these sort of food choices, I would never tell a patient you have to eliminate them entirely. Those things aren't sustainable. And so when I'm communicating to patients sort of the food choices and dietary changes, it's really being conscious of their culture and also maybe what sort of state they are in their inflammatory disease process, because a lot of that is evolving and it's a pendulum, and it's not something that you can just say, I'm going to eat a vegan diet and that's it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I feel like a lot of patients have good success maybe for a time period, but then it's just not sustainable.
Yeah. Let me go back to the phone lines. Let's talk to Edward calling from Bowie. Edward, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes. I've had Crohn's for over 30 years. I was first diagnosed back in 1989. I had a bowel resection in 93. And after that, for 10 years, I was pretty much drug-free and pretty much symptom-free for about 10 years. And then it came back. And so I've been dealing with it actually since about 2003 on the second phase here. And they have me on several medications. They seem to work well, but I'm concerned about the medications. They're immune suppressant drugs, and you know, with the COVID and everything that's out here, they do give me some relief, but I still have symptoms, and I still have to monitor my life based on you know, my Crohn's and stuff. I'm just kind of concerned of the long term effect that these immune suppressant drugs will have on my system, since I've been on them for over 20 years at this point.
Doctor?
Sure. So I think that's a great question. It depends certainly on what sort of medications you're on, but I think given how long you've had your inflammatory bowel disease, it sounds like you've been on some of the medications that have been around for many years, where we have lots of long-term safety data. And I will tell you is that these medications are really safe. And yes, there are risks with any and all medications, but whenever we prescribe them, it's really the sort of risk benefit. And when we think about what are the risks versus the benefits almost always outweigh the risks of the medication. And that's something that I have constantly a conversation with my patients. And I absolutely understand your hesitancy with COVID and now going into flu season in the winter. But I think, again, you know, when we think about leaving inflammatory bowel disease untreated or undertreated, there's so many consequences or problems that can happen. So I would tell you is that if your medications are working or if they seem to maybe not be working, then it's a conversation that you need to be talking to your gastroenterologist about. I will say, again, because there's been so many new medications that have been coming, like developed, the safety of some of them are actually better than some of our more old school medications. So that's something, a conversation that you could have with your doctor. And I think that for a lot of patients, that gives them a lot of hope. And it's exciting. I think it's exciting for me as a gastroenterologist to be able to offer my patients medications that are safer today than they were a few years ago.
Well, Edward, thank you for sharing your experience with us. Before I wrap up, I did have another question. What about some of the use of over-the-counter treatments for, you know, gastrointestinal problems, for lack of a better term, Dr. Padilla, such as, you know, probiotics and the like? Is that, again, a case-by-case basis?
Well, I will say probiotics is something that is heavily marketed. It's all over the grocery stores, yeah, all over TV. And really, we don't have good evidence to say that probiotics is really good for you, to be honest, even though, you know, these companies make you believe that you need it. So that's just my blanket statement. Now, there are some patients that has been well studied that probiotics may be helpful for, but as a general
for most people, absolutely not. It's probably a big waste of money, and you're unlikely getting much benefit. Now, there are some over-the-counter medications that are well-studied for inflammatory bowel disease that have better evidence than probiotics, things like turmeric, which is sort of an Ayurvedic spice found in like Southeast Indian or Asian foods,
mm-hmm.
and so like curry dishes and things like that. And turmeric is an excellent anti-inflammatory, and I do recommend that for many of my patients that have inflammatory bowel disease because it's natural, and you know, for patients that really enjoy curries and things like that, they love it, and it works. There's a lot of good evidence to support it in inflammatory bowel disease, so that's something that is very much something that I try to get patients on for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Vitamin D is another one. Many patients are very much low in vitamin D, and we know that optimizing or getting those levels to be normal can help. So those are probably the two over-the-counter medications or sort of supplements, I would say, that are very helpful.
What about, is there any relationship between any of these diseases and iron?
Yes. So iron levels being very low is a very common complication of inflammatory bowel disease. So because the body is so inflamed, a lot of patients, even if they don't see blood in their stool, sometimes they're just losing microscopic amounts of blood in their stool. So then they have very low iron levels, and so they need to be on iron supplements. So yes, iron sometimes is very much needed as a part of that. Because low iron is so common in most patients with inflammatory bowel disease, a lot of times they're getting like IV or intravenous iron, not just oral iron.
Mm. This is such a complex issue, and with so many things to consider. I wanted to make sure that I had Melody kind of sharing in some final thoughts about not only your process, but also, you know, the advice that you give for people who are also going through the same kinds of challenges that you are.
Absolutely. So Kochi, my organization, Color of Crohn's and Chronic Illness, it was developed out of a need that Black and brown patients weren't actually finding each other, and many of them thought that they were an island, that they were the only patient with this disease, being challenged with the disease, struggling through with the disease. And that's why I created the organization, so that not only could we find each other, but we could understand what the challenges are. How do we combat these challenges? How do we learn how to advocate for ourselves? And understanding more than just advocacy in the office, but in the policy. What's affecting us? Dr. Padilla alluded to one of the challenges that, you know, is in our advocacy wheelhouse, which is medication and insurance companies wanting to pay for cheaper meds, right? They don't want to pay for something if it's too high, if they can find something that seems similar or equal to the higher priced drugs. So there's a lot of support that we offer at Kochi. And I would say, I think it's important if you're managing these diseases, especially if you're earlier on or you're in late stage two, to find the community. Come to us. We're happy to talk and chat. We have support groups like Together IBD. We do Meet the Medic, where we introduce you to other physicians. We have one of the greatest gastro conferences ever, which is extremely culturally competent, which is now transitioned to Equity in GI from Equity in IBD. And we do so much to support our community because it was never there until we got here.
Yeah. A final word from you, Dr. Padilla.
Yes. So I would just echo what Melody just said. I feel like as a gastroenterologist, honestly, what Melody is doing within the organization of Kochi is life-changing for patients, and it's incredibly important for patients to find their community, find their tribe, find their people that can help advocate for each other and you guys can learn from, and that's what's really, really important, and that's one of the reasons why I'm involved with this organization. It's amazing, and there's a huge movement, so if any listeners that have any sort of chronic illness, especially inflammatory bowel disease, you have to get on the website and become a member.
Well, Dr. Labelise Padilla and Melody Blackwell, thank you so much for sharing with us. This is really, it's been informative, it's been enlightening, and I hope that we've been able to help someone better understand what they or perhaps a loved one is going through. So I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, November 29th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.